C2A. Number 9A.
We come to the next subject, principle, and we must see how that subject follows the preceding ones. We just have finished really the high tone of soul as love, which said that how to work out on soul salvation with fear or against fear and trembling, that we can do that by being firm and constant. So the question is, well, to be firm and constant in what? Is that we are firm in that way from sense to soul, but what is the principle ruling really that operation? What is the demonstrating principle that should be at work? And so that leads us quite naturally to the fourth subject of principle. In this fourth subject, we see as a main tone, we had as an epitome, that through man's unity with principle, we are divinely empowered. Now we suddenly come to the question, how are we divinely empowered? From where do we take the power of demonstration? From where do we take the spiritual power? Is there a way and a logical sequence that can tell us how to get that spiritual power? And this is depicted in the fourth subject through the seven subtones again. So what we will find in principle is actually those ideas that characterize principle from the point of view, what are the foundations of principle, what are the scientific foundations, and that naturally in opposition to what are the wrong foundations, what are really the theological foundations, the and the personal foundations. So reading through the whole text of principle, one cannot help but notice that these qualities that have to do with the foundational sense of principle and its opposite come up again and again. There are about 24 of these renderings that are shown here. I just read them again quickly just to get the tonality of it, which says that I start out with the false foundations because they are really those that bother us. The false foundation is if we build on Jesus as a person, if we build on human beliefs, on hierarchies, on the worst passion of men, then on ordinary theological views, on popular opinion, erudite theology, spiritualism, on the material blood of Jesus as the saving agent, then an implicit faith in the teacher, that's also a false foundation, founding oneself on mere theory, doctrine or belief, or on any form or system of religion and worship. Can you see it all had to do with a counterfeit of principle? Either it had to do with a personal foundation or a foundation in personal sense and in a person like the teacher or as Jesus, or it had to do with a foundation that had to do with theology, with spiritualism. All these are not foundation on which we can build. What then are the true foundations which are brought out in this subject? So it speaks that our foundations are, for instance, the original text of the Bible. The Bible is a foundation. Then the revelation of God is a foundation. Then naturally a lot about the divine principle and the divine principle of being or the science of celestial being. Can you hear constantly principle and science, the divine principle of all real being? Christian science is a basis, God is a basis, the principle which is love is our basis. So you have those two aspects of the same coin, false foundations, true foundations. Now, in order to work out that salvation, naturally we have to rely on the true foundations and not on the wrong foundations. Again, reading the text through, besides pointing out what are the true and wrong foundation, the text is full of those characteristics which also symbolize principle, namely proof, demonstration, divine power. Constantly the question is that there must be proof of the principle. Again, I read them down quickly just to get the tonality of it. Jesus showed how complete was the great proof of truth and love. We must give the requisite proof of our piety to prove what God is and what he does for man. Jesus proved by his deeds that Christian Science destroys sin, sickness and death, that to prove beyond the question that the Christ has come, or then the term demonstration, which is a similar thing, that Jesus taught by demonstration, that he demonstrated the principle of being, that we have to demonstrate the control over sin, that his demonstration of power over death was shown, or divine power, that the demonstration must be of divine power, that God is the power in the messianic work. So just reading them through, you can see there are within those three pages, there are dozens of those characteristics that constantly bring out the foundation of principle, the true or wrong foundation, that have to be proved, that have to be demonstrated. So can you hear that this is a completely different subject? That's another little hint that each student can consider in his text interpretation, is that when it comes to a next subject, like here to a fourth subject, and wants to be sure that he can identify truly that this is a new subject and that it does not have the same quality or the same characteristics as the preceding ones, it's always good to just to go back and think over what were the main qualities and characteristics that were brought out, so as to become sure of one's own findings. If we go back to mind, what do we remember about mind, the mind subject, that it had all to do with that doing things, with that acting things, that acting boldly, that going on, and that sense of actually going along the law of atonement, that all had constantly that sense of activity, of acting, of doing. But when we came to the second subject of spirit, we didn't find that constantly recurring. Something else was constantly recurring, that real tone of spirit which says, make a separation between the two. Make a clear-cut line of distinction so that you know what is wrong and what is right. See the fact and the counterfeit, so that you know from where to where you have to go then. Then we had soul, and in soul we had a completely different tonality there, which always said, and when you go from the one to the other, then go along that with a consistency, with persistency, with sticking to it, and never giving in, and just have those qualities of going forward and not giving in. And now, suddenly, we come to another subject where these first three subjects are no more the main tone, but the fourth subject gives a completely different picture, constantly saying, what is your foundation, what is not your foundation? If you have the true foundation, then prove it, demonstrate it with spiritual power. Can you hear spiritually the change of tones? And actually we can hear those change of tones actually only when we know the synonymous terms. So if without the tonality of the synonymous terms, therefore we cannot detect these differences, because without the synonymous term we do not make any distinction. We take every idea, we take every sentence, we take every word as equal with all the other words. And so we have a whole swarm of gnats in our air, and don't know where we are, and it's a bewildering thing. Therefore, we never could understand the textbook. So we begin to realize the great value of knowing distinctions. Somebody who does not the distinction between really the synonymous term would not find a distinction in the text. He couldn't find it. It is our consciousness that is structured that can read the text, and not the other way around. That the text, which is printing ink, which is of a linguistic category, can never really give us an ontological insight. That must be understood, that grammar cannot give us a spiritual insight. It is the other way around, that if we have the language of spirit within us very clear and clear and clear, that then we can read that language of spirit in the text. Yes, so let's go and see what principle has to tell us how we find our true basis and foundation. What are the constituents of such a true foundation? The first subtone of mind is rather short and shows us something very nice, namely, she says, acquaintance with the original text. You see, if you acquaint yourself, well, how is that possible? It's only possible through mind. You acquaint yourself by thinking about it, by knowing it, by taking it into our mind, in our thinking. So acquaintance already gives a sense of mind being now here in operation. And therefore, that acquaintance with the original text always is showing the whole system principle. And added to it, the willingness to give up human beliefs. Can you say again that within our mentality that acquaints itself with the original text must also be the willingness to give up our preconceived notion about the Bible or the textbook, the willingness to give up our beliefs, our opinions about it. You know, it's very interesting to see that students very often just rely on opinions of what is in the book, on opinions what another one has taught him, what science is, relying on opinion instead of going right down to the text itself and read the text, analyze the text, and study the text. So she said that is necessary. So that we should always go really to the original text, to the original source of a text, and not to secondary literature. And if I say that, naturally I more or less accuse myself by saying, well, I write about the textbook, so that too is secondary literature, and therefore that secondary literature would be wrong if it would not rely constantly on the original text of the textbook. Therefore, I would be very hesitant to write a book that is not really constantly showing what is in the textbook. Only in this way we have some kind of a security and are sure that our teaching is correct. And that's what we should do with all other books, that we should go to the original text as much as we can. And she says, now, we have to give up those human beliefs. Why should we give up those human beliefs? Because they come not from principle. They come from the opposite of principle, namely established by hierarchies and instigated sometimes by the worst passion of men. And you see, they are humanly conceived, they are personally conceived, they come from people and not from principle, from men and not from principle. So whatever people think out and calculate in a spiritual way, we have to be very, very cautious and say, let's go back to the original text and let's give us the proof from the original text. That's why we like to always to go back to the Bible and the textbook and try to prove everything through the text of the Bible and the textbook. And though only that will, she says, open the way for Christian Science to be understood. That will open the understanding of the text principle, and make the Bible the chart of life. Make the Bible really the system of principle, really that chart where everything is pointed out, where everything is collected into one a system, into one web of consistency, where the voice and healing currents of truth are pointed out, where they are, where mind points out, really, when we read the original text with the mind that has written them. And therefore, when we read the Bible and when we read the textbook, we should approach it always only with the mind of Christ and not with our human thinking, and try to understand the text with human thinking. So whenever we really study those revealed texts, we should be aware that we just don't just approach those books and just open them and just begin to read as if we could read it with our human mind. It's a great advantage if we first sit down and realize to ourselves that we have that mind which wrote the text, that we have no other mind but that mind which did dictate the text, therefore that we have the mind of God, the mind of Christ, and that we are not reading the text with any other mind but that mind which dictated the text. And because we know that we can have that mind through atonement that wrote the text, then from we can establish within our consciousness that one mind and flow along that one mind, and in that way can interpret principle, the text. So we have mind as that which goes right to the text, to the teaching, to the principle laid out in a text. We come to an aspect of spirit, and here again we find what we have found before, that the moment she takes up the subject of spirit, of spiritualization, of spiritual worship, it's always against really ritualistic worship, against theological worship. And here we have over nearly one page the subtone of principle as spirit. It's a long subject, but actually it doesn't say very much, except that she tries to illustrate the same point again and again from different angles, but there are just many examples of the one simple point of principle as spirit, which says that principle should be approached in a spiritual way and not in a ritualistic way, and that only if we can conceive or can consider and understand the Bible and the revealed text spiritually and not theologically, that alone will bring progress. Again, we have that only the spiritual brings progress, that the ritualistic does not bring progress, but quite the opposite, that it is brings retrogression. Let's see how she said it. I can read it very quickly, because as I said, it reiterates the same thing. He to whom the arm of the Lord, we know that the arm of the Lord was a symbol for principle, for the spiritual power of principle. That was a biblical symbol for that idea of principle. He to whom the arm of the Lord is revealed. That's principle as mind. And now she goes to spirit. Will believe our report, and the effect of it is, and rise into newness of life with regeneration. We really then have the new birth. We arise to the new birth with regeneration, and we have the newness of spirit and the newness of life as spirit. And with that, she more or less has said all what she wants to say, because she says this is having part in the atonement. This is the understanding in which Jesus suffered and triumphed. So what Jesus suffered because he understood principle, principle as spirit. He suffered under it because the world did not understand it. The world does not want to understand God through spirit. The world wants to understand God through theology and ritualism. So the time is not distant when the ordinary theological view of atonement, can you see the ordinary theological view, that the counterfeit of principle, will undergo a great change. What kind of a change? A change as radical as that which has come upon popular opinion, that's a counterfeit of principle, in regard to predestination and future punishment. You know that from Unity of Good, in that article on caution in the truth, Mrs. Eddy must have been very much impressed at that time. It was around about 1886 or 7, that she was very much impressed that the theology began to have a different view on predestination and future punishment, because that was a difficult point in her youth. That was when she parted with the church, that she did not accept as a child, 16-year-old I think, did not accept the doctrine of predestination, future punishment. And we know the crisis that came on little Mary, because the father was a stern theologist, a stern adherence to rigid theology, and he just couldn't swallow that her daughter would rebel against it. And so that was something that she brought up again in Unity of Good and said, this is a sign how little by little then theology undergoes a change and begins to accept a higher principle. So again she goes on with, does erudite theology, you see again she is just talking out principle versus theology. Does erudite theology regard the crucifixion of Jesus chiefly as providing a ready pardon for all sinners who ask for it and are willing to be forgiven? And also the same question to another counterfeit of principle, namely to spiritualism. Does spiritualism find Jesus' death necessary only for the presentation after death of the material Jesus as a proof that spirits can return to earth? She takes up two counterfeits of principle. The one is erudite theology, the other one is spiritualism. She says that both take the crucifixion of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus to prove their point, to make it adaptable to their opinion, namely that theology says, well, it is a symbol that you just have to ask forgiveness from Jesus and then we will be forgiven. And the spiritualists take that very same incident and say, this proves our theory, this proves our opinion, namely proves that spirit returned to earth as a spirit, and therefore there are spirits, and therefore spirits are a reality. And so Mrs. Eddy says, then we must differ from them both. So Again, she makes in spirit a line of demarcation and says, what I present as a divine principle has nothing to do with the counterfeit of principle, with the theories of theology and of spiritualism. Again, she goes back to that crucifixion and says, the efficacy naturally is spiritual power, the power of demonstration of principle. The efficacy of the crucifixion lay in the practical affection and goodness it demonstrated for mankind. So she goes back to her principle and says, that principle is here to demonstrate really what spirit, namely affection and goodness, and not a ritual. The truth had been lived among men, but until they saw that it enabled their master to triumph over the grace, his own disciples could not admit such an event to be possible. Only after the resurrection, even the unbelieving Thomas was forced to acknowledge how complete was the proof of truth and love. So this ends the tone of spirit. We can see what she wants to bring out. She takes up the sword and fights against theology, against spiritualism, against false doctrines, and say those false doctrines always somehow take Jesus' life and Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection and use it for their purpose and for proving their theory. But I, Mrs. Eddy, disagree with them. I differ from them both, and makes a clear-cut line of distinction and says the principle of being is the demonstration of pure spiritual affection and goodness. That is what we have to demonstrate, and not really a ritualism. That would be the second point. Again, what was the first point? First point was that we get at the core of that principle, at the basis of that principle, if we, with the mind of Christ, go back to the origin of the revealed teaching, to the origin of the Bible, to the original text of the Bible, and begin to consider the Bible from the point of view of that mind which wrote it, and are willing to give up our human opinions about the Bible. What should we give up as human opinions? What should be the line of demarcation, what is mind's revelation, and what is human opinion and their theory? And so we come to principle as spirit, which says that what theology says, that what spiritualism says, that what all the counterfeit of principle says, that's not real. What is real is that what we prove with spiritual qualities, that we demonstrate really the affection and goodness, and that is what is necessary to prove God.